Venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends. Now we are going to start the today's Dhamma talk. As a consent, may you all say three times, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Saṅkhārā bhikkhave anattā, saṅkhārā bhikkhave attā abhavissaṃsu, saṅkhārā neva abhādāya saṅvatteyyaṃ tīti. Dear Dhamma friends, we have taken this famous discourse of the Buddha known as Anattalakkhana Sutta, or the sometimes it has been labeled as Panchavaggiya Sutta. There the Buddha gives his explanation about the five aggregates, and basic idea was to prove its impermanent non-self characteristics, and starting from the materiality, going to the feelings, perception and volition and the consciousness. So far we have reached our 11th day in our retreat, and we managed to go through the materiality, the corporeality, the feeling, the perception, according to our abilities. And yesterday we reached the subject of Sankhara, the volition, and we try our best to understand its literal meaning, the book knowledge, and then with our comparative knowledge with our rest of the Dhamma understanding, that is to say the deductive knowledge, and further into how can we incorporate that knowledge to enhance or increase the interest, motivation towards our day-to-day practice. So at the beginning of yesterday's talk itself, I mentioned that the term, the Pali term known as Sankhara, and Sanskrit it is called Sanskara. In singular, we use the mix Sankhara, Sanskara, but Sanskara is much familiar to the single stone. And Westerners, or in the sense, in Western kind of thinking, specifically, if someone wished to translate this term into English, they have gone through the occurrences of this term in the Sutta Pitaka or in the discourses, and found basically four nuances, or basically four shades of meanings. And accept, it is very difficult to translate directly into English medium, English language. And not only that, a thorough study will show, even to get a unified idea, unified meaning or single term, even in Pali is difficult, because it has many shades of meaning according to the background, according to the circumstances. So one meaning was that our bodily, verbally and mental manifestations, they also have kind of preparation or kind of activities. So when and where our bodily activities are going to the minimum amount of preparation, or in the sense when we let it happen, that is we call kaya sankhara. So as far as the verbal expressions, articulations are concerned, when you allow to do its bare minimum, then it come back to applying thoughts and the discursive thoughts with vitakka vichara. Whenever we let the mind to go back to its rock bottom at the substrata, that is, at that time, it is called chitta sankhara or manu sankhara, as the feelings and perception. Two mental factors known as feelings and perception. So Buddha managed to prescribe the technique of meditation with respect to this Kaya Sankhara, Vachi Sankhara and Mano Sankhara. So in Anapanasati Sutta, if you refer, the Buddha explained in due place where the bodily activities, bodily manifestations come to the bare minimum. And though it is not directly mentioned about this Vachi Sankhara, Vitakka and Vichara, taken from the other references, one can see if the bodily manifestations or bodily preparations are to come to the bare minimum, before that, the verbal activities or Vachi Sankhara has to tamed or docile, and then only one can bring the bodily activities or Kaya Sankhara to the very rock bottom level. If I am to expand little bit on this, when we are going to do meditation based upon the body as the Kayanupassana or materiality, we may take the breath as the representative of our bodily manifestations, and we will let it happen, just automatic breathing without any involvement, without any manipulations, without any doing anything or forced breathing. And then you, when you are trying to develop the mindfulness based on the in-breath and out-breath, present-day meditators basically understand you may sometimes use the technique of noting or labeling of the very object, that is to say in-breath and out-breath, in order to align the mind and the object. Meditating mind and the meditated, the object of meditation, the noting, that very noting is known as vitakka, and that is we use as a tool in order to keep the object of meditation face to face with the meditating mind. So vitakka is the manifestation of verbal expression or Vachi Sankhara. So you are using at the beginning, but you may clearly understand if you are a successful meditator, when the breath becomes subtle, your noting capacity becoming nullified, you can't note no more, because at a time you may feel in-breath and out-breath is equal, or in-breath and out-breath becomes so subtle, the noting itself will be a disturbance. So halfway, once you use the noting as a technique, halfway you have to drop it. And then only the calm mind or mindfulness going to be parallel with the subtle breath. And before the breath becomes subtlest, the noting has to stop. So that is the phenomena explained according to the Sankhara. The Vachi Sankhara has to cease to exist before the Kaya Sankhara ceases to exist. Before you reaching the subtlest point of the Kaya Sankhara, Vachi Sankhara is already become subtle, unperceivable. So that is how that point I will elaborate today, or if it is possible tomorrow, because it is very significant. The very important practical hints are there, how much you must note and when and where the meditation is catching, when the momentum is catching, when the mindfulness is going to take the task, you must let the meditation to take place without involving even with noting. So we have to stop it. Of course, it is very relevant to this subject of Sankhara. So we have to take it. But for the moment, I would like to say Vachi Sankhara come into, it will ceases to exist. And then you will be, if you are successfully managing, you will see the cessation of almost or unperceivable layer of kaya sankhara, and then you have a better chances to go into vachi sankhara, chitta sankhara, that is to face to face with feelings and the perception. That is one of the shades of meaning of the sankhara, that your bare minimum adjustments, bare minimum involvement with the bodily activity, verbal activity, and the mental activity. So in vipassana, what we do is, from the gross physical activities, physical functions or physical involvement to the bare minimum, in other words, let it happen automatically. And noting also, you use vigorously at the beginning in order to keep the mind with the object. But when and where the object and the mind come face to face, it slowly, slowly you have to withdraw. It is naturally withdrawing. And ultimately, noting will cease to exist. That is to call that vachi sankhara also ceases to exist. And then you will be exposed to the feelings and the perception. Of course, at the beginning, they will be proliferating. They will be giving very dramatic and very colorful events. But you must try your best not to get involved with them, not to assume them, and not to claim them as positively or negatively. You must manage to let them calm down. So that is how you cut through the sankhara, volitions, and there you can say preparations. You do away with preparations, involvements. At the beginning it is yes, but slowly, slowly, slowly you withdraw your all the preparation or manipulations or manifestations, manipulations and steering, and let it happen. That is one way we can make use this sankhara into our meditation. The second part is, as far as the 12 aspects of dependent origination is concerned, avijja, the ignorance, is the root cause for this sankhara, avijja paccaya sankhara. That is also famous expression, famous thing among the Buddhists, at least literally. So, and then sankhara is leading to consciousness, vijnana. So this is also very important aspect as far as the philosophy is concerned. That is to say, when and where we have a choice, when and where we have a varietal presentation, we have no capacity to absorb everything, taste everything, consume everything. So therefore, we have to select out of the array, out of the presentation. So who is making the decision, how it is happening, only you can justify after it happens. Beforehand, do we have any saying, any discipline to say that I am going to select this and I am going to reject that? So this is kind of a doubtful situation. My famous example is, when you are going to a buffet diet, the table will be filled with lot of different foods and drinks and many, many, many eatables. So you don't know till you go up to this hall, dining hall, what are the things there will be. But soon you go there, your selection of this is the plate. You serve what you prefer to the plate, because you can't eat all the dining table. That you have to understand. So you have to select. It's a condition. When you selected, is it a pre-planned thing, or is it suitable for your nutriment contentment, necessity, or it is good for your health, or is it worth this meal? All these things you may talk about, but you will simply understand two people never select the same. That much is sure. So the selected, the absorption, taking, also known as sankhara. Sankhara means your involvement, your preparation for when such a situation happens. Sankara take the upper hand, and that is the what you are going to consume, that you taken into the plate, and that is the what you are going to taste, that is the what you are going to chew, that is the what you are going to swallow, and you are, that is the what you are going to absorb. If it is bad thing, you will suffer a lot. If it is nutrient thing, you will get the benefit of it, like that in a given situation of a normal commoner, he is having six faculties, eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body and the mind. And enough visual objects, enough sounds, enough smells, enough tastes, enough tactile contacts and proliferation for the mind. The next moment, are you going to be a seer or listener or person who's smelling or tasting or touching or thinking? Is there any order? Is there any agenda? So, but anyway, it is very crucial. It is representing who you are by your preference, by your selection. And when you're observing it, it says, one donkey at a time. You can, if you are choosing to be, for example, be a seer, definitely you have to accept you will be dumb. You can't smell. You can't taste. You can't touch. You can't think because your mind, consciousness is engaged with seeing. So as far as the seeing is happening, selecting one means rejecting five. That phenomena, if you know it, conscious selection of one, that means seeing, is rejecting all the other kind of thing. So after seeing, if you are going to say, I am fully in that experience, I got the full experience, I saw it, but you do not know, you miss your listening, you miss your smelling, touching, tasting and thinking. And next moment, of course, you don't know, it's so swift. You may be shifting from seeing to listening or smelling. So when these things happens, sankhara is the causative factor, decided factor, selecting out of the whole array. And partly that is you can control. The moment you try to study this phenomena, you will see there are some underlying tendencies whenever you have such a big choice. Even if you select it or not, there's underlying tendencies that which prompt you, push you, and ultimately you will taken into that. And whether it is healthy or not, whether it's morally balanced or not, whether it is expected or not. So therefore, selection, partly you have a choice. Partly it is happening in order to make this existence continuum. So the day you understand the unintentional selection which happens through you is a direct personality trait, and that indicates who you are. If you are to be aware of that, if you are to expose yourself to this truth, you will understand, are you a master or a slave? As far as you do consciously, you are a master. But there are a lot of chances you have no way because you will be pulled into, you will be prompted into that kind of a decision or selection, and they are unknowingly you have become a slave to your own inclinations, proclivities and tendencies, and to understand you will be humiliated. You'll be humiliated how much thing this mechanism is happening, what the current is undergoing, and therefore the Buddha, as far as this avijja paccaya sankhara sankhara paccaya vijnana, he says, Sankhata, so one term came out of the sankhara. Sankhata means volitionally or consciously you make the choice. And the asankata means, whether you like it or not, there are some other urge, there is some other underlying tendencies taking you into that, and you are just a slave into that. Therefore, in each and every aspect, seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, all the kind of this sankata, asankata is yet another shades of meaning. And for example, when you stop force breathing, when you let the breath to be very subtle and calm down, still without your perception, the breathing takes place, you can't perceive it, and then it continues. Your life continuum, and when that happens, whenever you cut off your controllable amount of volitional involvement, there's so much of things going to happen. For example, you start to shake your body without your will. Unknowingly, your body starts some kind of irrelevant kind of movements. Irrelevant kind of feelings are going to happen, irrelevant kind of perceptions are going to happen, irrelevant kind of dreams are going to happen, and you yourself will be moved. You can't understand how these things are happening. And then therefore you think it is the Creator God is coming and like do its intelligent design. Or you will say another person is doing black magic and you are under the spell of that black magic. Or you may think that kind of a bad thing you have done future and that is happening. So when and where these unvolitional things are going to come up, your interpretation are so irrational, your interpretations indicate who you are. And that is what it come out in the interviews. In the discussions, when and where you stop, or not the stop, if you manage to see the cessation of in-breath and out-breath, so much of proliferating, so much of things are coming out. It is not the matter of the thing coming out. Most important thing is your own interpretation. How do you going to value it? How do you going to understand it? How do you going to relate it to another person? How do you going to relate it to your rest of the life? It's a completely new thing. Therefore, many people think meditation is a mystic. That is because you have to first behave in such a way, do it in such a way, you have to facilitate, cut off all the intentional activities and let the thing happen naturally. So then, physical actions, verbal actions, mental actions, they're going to come out. As if you are looking at a water body and the bubbles are coming and surface and burst off. Out of the gas made out of there. Exactly the same thing happened, but you won't believe this is happening for each and every person, but their interpretations indicate your upbringing, indicate your liking and disliking, indicates your personality. But hardly any person will give a inside kind of look, inside kind of approach to your own interpretation. Your own interpretation, giving a long story, it is like you have taken a hypnotic regression. That is what is happening is, as if you are in a hypnotic regression, your most important past psychological wounds and everything is surfacing. So it surfaces and talks you with the figurative language. It is talking in the epithets and kind of thing. You yourself can't decode it. Because it is coming from the out of the, not out of the context. When these things happen, you can see due to your ignorance, in the so-called conscious world, you have your choice, you select it. So if you are going to live the whole life in the sensuous sphere, you will be fighting in the one-upmanship, try to get more and more consumerizing, and ultimately you will never see what will happen if you stop this kind of volitional food to the mind and what is going to happen. So that is what we do. We go to a forest, close your eyes, go to a silent place, don't give any intentional activity to the body, don't let the smells come and make your nose busy, don't taste anything, don't talk, and stop everything. And the last is the breath. See the cessation of the breath also as much as possible, and then face it. When you are facing so much of stories, so much of complaints, so much of the reactions happening, so that is the real way to see who am I. But many, no one will think that is indicating my own representative, but instead they think there may be some external atta or powerful God or some kind of a mystic power, or you think inside you there are some kind of so-called essence or soul kind of thing. But the Buddha says these bubbling up itself has its own justification, that is because of your underlying tendencies, your proclivities and habits. And if you let it happen, observe it, the beginning, the middle and the end, without assuming, then you will understand. So whenever the inflow of the impingement, strategically you stop it, the what is stored inside is coming up. When you are coming up, it is like a regression in the hypnotic regression. So at that time you are the psychopath, you are the psychiatrist, your medicine is the observation. So the patient, if you observe it, you can see what is under the carpet, what is the circuit in which this machine is running. So there also you can see, due to the ignorance, in the conscious world you select. But even if you are not selecting, there's a mechanism you brought from the past life, maybe due to your liking and disliking, maybe due to your personality traits, maybe that's a kind of a mechanism. So there are volition work in active form and passive form. Active form we call the mind, consciousness, and the passive form in the Western psychology we can say subconscious. And there are many, many things are happening. Some people never exposed to them because they are not meditating, they are not mindful, they never experience any kind of a concentration. So therefore mind is always superficial, and only they live in this outer consciousness. They have no chance to go into this subconscious layers. I am using Western terminology, or asankhata vinyani. Sankhata means that prepared, involved, and with your consent. But there is a kind of a huge, it says from the Freudian terminology, tip of the iceberg. Tip is the what that you are manipulating, you are involved, and you prepared. Underneath is the huge berg. This is proportioning to 1 to 9. Only 1/10 is upside the water, huge part is down there. So your whole conscious world is on that, what you call, on the tip of the iceberg. But whenever you go into the subtlety of the breath, whatever may be the primary object, and still if you can be mindful, if you can be contented, and if you can maintain the integrity, you can cut through and go there, and that is the place you go into the asankhata area, that is, things are happening and it is bewildering you. Bewilderment, because it is happening not out of context. Only anything can happen, so you have to be very patiently observe it, and then only you can see the under the carpet, the way of mind is working. So through volition or through this sankhara, that is also one way to understand it. When and where your preparations, your adjustments, your steering stops, but still observe through your mindfulness, slowly, 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 you are going to see your real nature, your real ego, your real the manipulations. So hardly one can bear it up because it almost appear like mystics. So therefore, the Buddha, in a very systematic way, he advised the person to give up or let go all the bodily activities, all the verbal activities, all the mental activities, but be more and more mindful. As and when you become weaned off from the bodily activities, verbal activities and the mental activities, and you find there are a lot of other balance, a lot of other equilibriums in the consciousness with respect to this volition. There are deep layers. So in meditation, therefore, the moment the Buddha enlightened, he uttered a kind of a psalm. He says, Aneka jati sansarang sandha vishyang anibhisang ghakarang gavesanto dukha jati punapuna ghakarang dittosi punagihanna kahasi sabba te phasuka bhagga ghakutam vishankata vishankaragatan chitta. My mind is now almost free from all the preparations. Vishankara gatan chittan thannanam khayamajjaga. That very withdrawal of your preparation itself is the getting rid of your desire. Because you are so motivated, you are so in an urge to actively show, actively participate, and ultimately mess up this whole natural flow. The world is running in a completely perfect natural flow. Whenever the ego comes, whenever the conceit comes, whenever the desire comes, you select one out of that. You select part out of that. That is because of your volitional activity. That is your involvement. Soon you commit. You are responsible for the part you selected and the part majority you rejected. And you will be punished enormously for this rejection for majority. You are ever punished because majority is gone for gone, ever. You don't feel by selecting some minor, tiny, trivial thing how much you are rejecting. So each and every moment you are unmindful, you are so engaged, so bogged down in seeing something so-called nice visual object or nice piece of music and some smelling, touching and all the kind of thing, you are not in the present moment, mind is not ready for broad spectrum because our volition is not happy with the totality. It's always selecting one trivial part. He says that is your choice. That is your liking and disliking. This is my personality and you will try your whole life to protect that of your right, to select the little and to reject the majority. So who is going to suffer? And to give a very enlivening or electric example, you see, when and where you go to the very calm, serene state where the breath is no more perceivable, and if you are going with the rising and falling of the abdomen, that is also ceases to exist. Sometimes, even in the walking meditation, you see things are happening. And at that time, you can understand your experience, your present moment, your mindfulness, your consciousness is not directly depend upon the eye or visual objects. It is not directly depending upon the ear or the sounds. It is not directly depending upon the nose or the smell or tongue or the taste. Sometimes your body also forgot it. You can't feel the body. Even if you are walking, it is like a puppet. And the mind also fully mindful. At that moment, you can see you are little bit, or at least for a second, thought moment, you are detached from material world. And you go to the immaterial kind of a sphere, and of course, you lose you miss the chance to entertain the world in terms of materiality, but you are opening the doorway to experience immaterial kind of atmosphere. We sometimes it is called immaterial pleasure. At that time, no eye, no visual object, no ear, no sounds and nothing, and you get kind of a pleasure. The Buddha says that pleasure excels all the pleasures in the materialistic world. For that, what you have to do is systematically get rid of all the material pleasure, then only you will expose to the immaterial pleasure, that is somewhat divine, that is somewhat beyond this rational human mind. And there, though you are detached from the visual objects, sounds and all the kind of things, your contentment, your satisfaction, your saturation is for the first time in your life, you will understand it is inalienable and unalloyed. You feel like be there. And you need not anything to enrich it, because it is by itself it is enriched. Understanding that itself says, by letting go, you get everything. If you are going to select instead a visual object and to see how nice it is, blue, yellow, green and shape, this and that, so much so you are carried away and you lose this chance to open into this immaterial pleasure. So therefore you must have a value judgment, you must have a kind of a understanding. By selecting this mere trivial worldly matters, you are losing this chance to go into the immaterial pleasure. But that immaterial pleasure is not the one the Buddha prescribed as the last achievement. It's a halfway. You understand inalienable and unalloyed situation is there, and each and every human has, the human being has its opportunity to go there, but they are so craving, so crazy, so conceited, so egoistic, they also wish to have 1 acre or 2 acres of land on the earth, or this and that shapes on the to the eye, this and that music into your ear, this smell, this taste, and the right for your human right, so-called. It is not the human right, it is the beastly right. Buddha says, all the beasts are at that level. Only human can go to this unalloyed and inalienable situation, but it is very difficult to convince someone that is the prime task of the human being, not only be satisfied with this materialistic pleasure, but instead why not go and have little door opening to this the sphere we are immaterial, and at that moment you see your bodily preparations are at the minimum and your verbal expressions or vitakka vichara are at the minimum and the mental involvement of feelings and perceptions are at the minimum. It is not an automatic situation. You have to appreciate it and go by calming down everything. So therefore volition, they give the third shades of meaning, the sankata asankata. Sankata means manifested, or you prepared, or it is unprepared. And when you go there, definitely you feel in the life, at least for a short period, what does it mean by the contentment? What does it mean by the saturation? What does it mean by the living? What does it mean by the human? So this is a compassionate invitation from the Buddha. Instead of spending whole life for this materialistic gratification and entertainment, why not once in a way go for a picnic into the non-materialistic sphere? When you go there, you will understand you are now only you try to live, young only here and there, you be a human. And with that three shades of meaning, the specifically Western philosophers, they see the motivational theory also through this term of volition or mental preparation or fabrication. To do something, as we discussed one day, I think day before yesterday, we need faith. To do something, we must have a motivation. We must have a drive. So therefore, at the beginning, even our spiritual life, let alone our physical and other the worldly achievement, we need kind of a motivation. In order to have a motivation, you must have conceit. Without that, no motivation. You must have ego. Without that, no motivation. You must have desire. No motivation otherwise. So therefore, at the beginning, to have a motivation to be a yogi or motivation to be a meditator, you must have your due desire, due conceit, and due egoistic idea. So therefore, when in Chulla Vedala Sutta, when the Visakha, Upasaka, the lay practitioner, asked him from the Dhamma Dina, the fully enlightened nun, dear sister, is this Four Noble Truth is kind of something that Buddha has manipulated or Buddha has created which need motivation, or it is happened without any motivation? Sankatang udhau asankatoti. Then this sister, Dhammadina says, of course it is sankata, you must have a motivation. It is a sankata, it is kind of a done. Buddha is done, it is not a natural thing. The Noble Eightfold Path is. And yesterday we saw, we try to understand, each and every such sankata is leading to suffering. Sabbe sankhara dukkha, sabbe sankhara anatta, anicca. If it is so, is the Four Noble Truth also leading to suffering? It's a very, very contradictory kind of inquiry, because the sister Dhammadina says it is a sankhata. Four Noble Truth is a sankhata. The direct question asked by the Visakha, whether it is sankhata or asankhata, is a sankhata. So, when you take a subject or issue like saddha, to be devoted, to be motivated, you must have desire, you must have conceit, you must have egoistic idea. But when you are proceeding with this initial desire, even you, we can analyze it with the mindfulness. To be mindful, you must have kind of a desire, you must have kind of a conceit, you must have kind of egoistic idea. Without that, mindfulness never come by itself. It is, you have to earn it. But when it is continuing, when the fate, when the mindfulness, or you can say when the energy, concentration and momentum, wisdom, when they are developing, they gather kind of a momentum, ultimately they take their own control by itself. At that time, your motivation, what happened to your motivation? How you are going to deal it with? And still, if you are going to do something, if you are going to prepare it, if you are going to fork your fingers, if you are going to manipulate it, you can't put the machine into autopilot. So you have to understand at the beginning, the volition, the will, the motivation is yes. But when and where you have to be very sensitive, when the machine gathering the momentum, must slowly, slowly withdraw it. And while withdrawing, you can see it learn by its own balance. It learn by its own equilibrium. Then only you have to withdraw ego. You have to withdraw your conceit, withdraw your desire, and machine start to get its own balance. So that point, the withdrawal of your preparations, withdrawal of your manipulations, not the manipulation, the steering, monitoring, it's a very subtle art. It is not a science. So no one can write books on that the subject. The example to cite is that if you are driving a car and it is fully loaded, and if you are on the uphill, halfway when it is going, you find that the top gear can't pull the piston, so you have to go for the heavy gear. So you have to understand when, you have to study the machine, engine, and you have to go for the higher gear, heavy gear. And still when it is climbing up, you may go to the top gear, to the fourth, third gear, third to the second. And when you surmount the mount, and when you're going back again, you have to release it. But the second to the third, third to the fourth. Can any engineer say, this is the time you have to change from the second to the third? No technical writers can tackle it. Therefore, all engineers are very poor drivers. Engineers can't understand because they think in terms of the engine. But the drivers, they know by their feelings. That is how you use the sankhara or technique of noting. You use it as far as it is gainful. And once the meditation by itself is catching the momentum, you must be doing the noble experiment in noble quest, how much I can let it happen. In the sense that let goism at that level could be explained in four ways. One thing is, you just disclaim anything happened. This is not me, not mine, not myself. Let the machine run. Or you can say, etan santang etan panitang yadidang upekha. Instead of going myself into accelerate or decelerate, let my mind be at the equilibrium or equanimity. Let the machine run by itself. Or sometimes the Buddha says, sati sambojjangam bhaveti viveka nishitam viraga nishitam nirodha nishitam patinissagana pasin. You let the mindfulness to run the show in a very relaxed manner. Don't get tense. Let the mindful run it by itself. And viraga nishitam, even the mindfulness drops, even if you become unmindful, don't get tense. It's on the way to get hardened. You must know the unmindfulness. Without that, mindfulness will never get hardened. So, viraga nishitam, even the mindfulness is disappearing, still you have to be very relaxed. Nirodha nishitam, you must be ready to see the disappearance of the mindfulness. At the beginning, you are so keen to develop the mindfulness. At the beginning, you are so keen to consistency of the mindfulness. Later at the time, you have to understand under such circumstances, mindfulness is losing the ground. Mindfulness is disappearing, but still you must be with a balanced mind, equipoise mind, be understand mindfulness itself is something subject to change. When it is disappearing, you have to develop such equanimity, it is called suchness, it is called tatata. Even if it is disappearing, it will come. Nothing to develop the tense. And Patanisaggana passing one day, that sweet, beautiful mindfulness also I have to let go. That is the most difficult part because when you are coming from the house to the the retreat, you all bring brags, thinking that you can collect as much as possible mindfulness, as go home and entertain the mindfulness even at the household life. That is what you come with. But if your meditation is successful in the retreat, you will understand that one day you have to see the letting go of the very mindfulness also. That day you will be so desperate. What a lovely thing I developed despite in my relatives and the whole the treasure and all the kind of thing. I came to the forest in order to develop mindfulness. But ultimately you have such a tata. That is the way the motivations are slowly disappearing. Spensky, he has written some stories about Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff is a very, very kind of a person. He is a Russian but worked basically in France. And he used to sit in the garden in the same seat together with the mother and looking at the greenery. And he tried to explain the small, tiny natural phenomena, so in detailed way. And one poet, taken it into a poem. He says, an artist go and sit on the ground, sit on the garden and look at the tree. And after the winter, a small twig came out and will it unfurl into a leaf. At the beginning, it is showing all the colors of the rainbow and maturing into the green, and then it is serving to the tree. Ultimately, it turned into that brown color, and while it is falling down, the leaf told ta-ta to the tree. And then it falls, unknown abyss. And that is what the Nibbana is. When the leaf is done, all the duties to the tree, it falls down, the wind decides where it goes and drops. Ultimately, decompose again, it will come to the tree again. So exactly the way all the qualities you develop, one day it sheds off. And when that happens, if you can look at it in an unshaken manner, in unmoved manner, equipoised manner, that is the point where all the motivation ends up. Till that, there is a shades of motivation, shades of push, all the kind of there, but more and more you are preparing for relinquishment, the final liberation, all the motivation you feel disappearing, but you become completely merging with the natural law, the universal law, and you ultimately find yes, at the beginning there should have a motivation, but your art must be when and where it is necessary to give up it and let the things happen in its own accord, so you become from the friction to frictionless path. Slowly, slowly you are learning the art. So next day, you have seen it today, and next day when you go and sit again, you must behave like a beginner. You must have all the faith, all the motivation, all the kind of thing you have to start. And whenever the success happens, whenever the momentum happens, whenever the acceleration happens, you see they take its own accord and your motivation is no more necessary. So no place for ego, no place for conceit, no place for desire. Ultimately, when you go there, you are merging into the totality and ultimately the contentment sets in and you understand your grip is slowly, slowly reducing and you become oceanic as a river flows into the ocean and identity of the fresh water disappears, merge into the brisky water of the river, the sea, and ultimately you can't call it as a river. That is the way it happens. So that starting with that motivation and ultimately end up with the natural flow also related with this volition, because the motivation is called chetana or will. Also shades of meaning, one of the shades of the meaning of the sankhara, the Buddha has given abhisan chetana, abhisanskara, both are synonyms. That means chetana is the one represent as sankhara. So, to come up to that last one thing, that chetana, later commentarial teachers, they found, according to the description of the Buddha and the whole Sutta Pitaka, here and there, Buddha has mentioned and recognized 52 mental factors. Mind and the mental factors. And out of these 52 mental factors, the feeling is one and it stands separately as the aggregate of feeling, and the perception is yet another one, very crucial, and stands separately as the aggregate of the perception. All the rest, 50 mental factors are known as sankhara. Out of these 50, most active, decisive one is the chetana, the will. So therefore, the whole bunch of thoughts, mental factors are known as either chetana or sankhara. So it is natural to have different roles because it is a group consists of 50 mental factors. So chetana is the leader. It says like the later commentators, they commenting, you see now we are given a contract for the balance of this area, and the team is working. And while the team is working, the main contract is not there. But there's a group leader. And that very leader, while working, advised the other people also. So he is monitor in the class, and teacher is not there. He is working as well as advise others to and supervise others. Likewise, the Chetana is the monitor, and it works. And meanwhile, take care about the rest of the 49 mental aspects. So ultimately, Chetana represents the whole group. So therefore, motivational theory or will, one has to really understand, as far as the motivation is there, as far as the drive is there, you can share with the others. You can put that into the language that you can communicate, you can articulate. But when and where the motivation is fading off and the momentum is catching, the contentment is going to come, you become dumbbell. You can't express it. So that indicates in many, many ways that your progress. As far as you can communicate, as far as you can express others, that is very gross. That so much so your desire is there, the conceit is there, ego is there. But when it's slowly, 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 they are fading off, the motivation also fading off, and then you feel kind of a contentment if you have any kind of acquaintance with your trial and error of the last sittings past, you can understand this happened. So more and more you go there, you find at the beginning, daily, you have to be the beginner's mind. Never think that you are achieve this and that. It also will help promote to the conceit. Don't give chance. Daily, start with the motivation. All the start with the scraps. And when you are going, after a while, you feel that now you can put into the autopiloting. And when you go there, slowly, slowly, you can withdraw. I would give a worldly example. When parents are raising their children, at the beginning, the parent has to look after the food, clothing, security, love, and everything. But when this child is coming up to certain age, you must let the child to get his own job done. And parents must be slowly withdrawn. Otherwise, they will never learn how to do it. And even the animals, they let their puppies to get their job done under the supervision. And when and where the child attending to the age, and they start this all the romantic feeling and kind of thing, ultimately, if the still parents are going to poke fingers with that you are really making an enemy. If you do not know how to withdraw and recognize the maturity of the child, and that soon he or she become sexually mature, parents must have still some kind of a supervigilance, kind of taking care. But if it is too much, definitely the children will find they are poking fingers into my and ultimately hatred going to happen. So how to withdraw and let the controlling power to the children. West has another model, East has another model. Both are failures. Both failure. Because parents still think this is my child that is enslaving. Children do not like it. So, parents completely lose their child age and ultimately they are going to interpret all the kind of things. So, ultimately it mess up. I am not telling just let go for bewilderment and do any kind of thing. So, there's a special art to keep the respect and keep the surveillance but letting them do their own task exactly the way in our unorganized life. Five hindrances are really taking the chance and controlling everything. The sexual desire, the hatred, sloth and torpor, remorse and the anxiety and doubt. So that is no good. So therefore you have to replace it with either with five jhanic factors, or sometimes you can say saddha, vidya, sati, samadhi, panya, the faculties and the powers, when they comes, definitely they will take care about the hindrances and they will take the upper hand. As far as they are taking the upper hand, we call pancha indriya, I mean they become faculties. Whenever the desirable feeling happen, either faith or energy or mindfulness or concentration or wisdom can take care. Now I am with the desire or hatred. Ultimately, when and where it is going to take the control, we call five faculties. But when gathering more further momentum, they become five powers. Whenever they become five powers, the definition Venerable Sariputta given is, what is the power of faith? Even you are unfaithful, if you are, even if your faith is eradicated or eroded, you must be unshaken. That is the point you can say you have reached the power of faith. The energy, your energy is to keep always upright and noting and the mobilization of energy. At that time, you will be consciously observe you are so sleepy. Your mind is so slimy. Sotantapa sets in, but still you must have the confidence, you must have the unshaken mind to see the lack of energy also. That is how you reinforce it. That is how you harden it. And the mindfulness, you develop your best, you try your best to keep mindfulness from A to Z, the morning to evening, but at a time you will see whatever you are going to try, mindfulness is subject to changes. At a time you see you are unmindful. So you must be a kind of equanimity, just accept it. The moment you accept unmindful with the unshaky mind, that is called power of mindfulness. And the concentration, whenever the concentration, you throw parties. Oh, I got the first jhana, I got the second jhana, and I see the other minds, and I can see the past and future, all the kind of things. Next day you will be scattered, finished. And there are a number of cases they have committed suicide. Because the due concentration, they can't get it. So much they had the attachment to it, they can never understand the scattered mind. They never understand it as human. Whenever it happens, so reacting. So the power of concentration means even the mind is scattering, even the mind is bewildered, you just see as if it is in a jhana, as if it is absorbed. So that is what the power of concentration and the wisdom means. At the beginning, you are gathering the knowledge at a rate. On the Dhamma sphere and the day-to-day activities and the worldly sense, ultimately the day you see, the wisdom means understanding your ignorance. Not this all accumulated thing from the second hand. The moment when you see your ignorance, your bewilderment, your stupidity, your darkness, still if you can be unshaken, that is called the power of wisdom. So that is the point, the motivation is dropped. Yeah, motivationally, with the motivation, you can't go to the lack of saddha. You can't go to lack of virya. You can't go to lack of mindfulness. You can't go to lack of concentration, lack of wisdom, because it is an accident. When that happened, if you know the motivational theory, you start at the beginning, yes, but when, even if it is going to eroded, eradicated, if you can still observe, this is what does it mean by the transient nature. Even though they are good things, even though they are beautiful mental factors, subject to change. So when it is changing to understanding without a will, without a distraction, without a disappointment, you are understanding the unvolitional and without commitment, your mind can incorporate it. Your mind can accommodate it, and that is how slowly, slowly you withdraw. You have no kind of a bondage with your faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, or wisdom. So therefore, at the beginning, you have to be a full faithful person to the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and for your moral sila, precepts. But once you go to the Arahanthood, you will be known as Asaddha, person who do not have faith. Because you have experienced everything, nothing to depend upon faith. That is the way you relinquished from the faith. So that is also you can explain through this motivational theory. So therefore, more and more you practice meditation, more and more you with trial and error, you will understand how this sankhara, your volitional involvement, or your willful involvement, or your preparation, which is on absolute terms not asked for, happening because of your desire, because of your conceit, and because of your egoism. But you do it with the idea of understanding it is possible for you to go to the unintentional, completely natural flow. When such a thing happens, slowly, slowly you give up all the preparations, and ultimately you will be merging with all the natural flows, or we can say flow, the principles of the mind, principles of the nature that is happening. So unless otherwise you have that kind of a radical or contradictory kind of understanding on this volitional activity, the will, you will be either fall into everything I must control or everything is happening. Both wrong. So philosophically it says, if you let everything to happen, it is epistemologically you are committing suicide. No knowledge can happen. So at the beginning you must have certain amount of understanding, at least on this volition, and then when it is gathering, you get detached from it, you get relinquished from it, but the thing happens in a natural accord. When that happens, a withdrawal, still you can explain through the let-goism. Whenever necessary, you withdraw and let the phenomena to take place, and this has to experience not once, thousand and one times. Then only you will understand that is a balanced state of the mind, that is one of the yet another equilibrium, and you can cut through. Each time you can come to the beginner's mind and go. Some people, when they are meditating, it takes about 1 hour, 1.5 hours sort of thing, just to let the meditation to let it happen, let go isn't. But when you are practicing in a retreat like that, like here, sometimes 2-3 minutes time, easily you can see that's natural flow and the vastness and kind of a serenity and kind of peaceful situation. You must try your best to not to get involved, not to commit anything, but to let the natural flow to happen. And there you will find, when you get up, your whole mind and the body is healed and it is well settled, and throughout you are living, not dreaming for the future, not regretting for the past. You are not thinking about other places. You are not thinking about other people, but you are here. And it appears like you absorb inside, but the mind is completely full-fledged. So that is the point where sankhara, the preparations are completely consciously stopped, and asankhara, just natural flow is happening. So one will ask, is this the what that we are expecting out of this whole renunciation? But we have to go back home and take home then, nothing. So it is like that you have gone to the Olympics and you win and you get a cabbage as a prize. So therefore no one can ask, please come and meditate, because at last you have nothing to give, nothing to gain. If you have any kind of that kind of a thing, it's a misperception, it's a misconception. So therefore you have to daily understand this state, that balanced state is already endowed with. So due to the desire, to the sensuous pleasure, we are cut off. We are blindfolded. So slowly, slowly you have to wean off. Then you will understand both. That in the neurological, it says you are shifting from the right hemisphere to the left hemisphere. When it's going to the right hemisphere, it was brand new so far. Now only you are going to use it. It is already there. And for the politicians, both are brand new. They never use the brain. They use the the secretary's brain. For the yogis, of course, you are using the left side and rationalizing and learning and all the kind of argumenting. But ultimately, meditation is pulling you to the other sphere. When you go there, you feel another being. Already been there, you are just recognizing it. But as you like, you can go to this hemisphere or to other hemisphere. So if it is disturbed, we call schizophrenic polarity. And within one person, multiple personality happen, so mystic life. That is ill health or aberration in the mind. But whenever you healthily open and available to the both, you understand the capacity of the human mind, how much we have been penalized, we have been cut off due to our choice. Due to the choice, selection of this very tiny trivial thing, you are sacrificing so much, you are rejecting so much. By not rejecting anything and accepting the phenomena as and when it happens, you become omnipotent and omnipresent and omniscient knowledge happens. So Buddha says it is not necessary totally for your liberation. When you are going halfway, your perspective will be changed. You will be not choosy. You would not be selecting, this is correct, this is not correct. I am so, this is not, this is ego, this is not ego. This selection is the real blindfolded thing. And that is because of the untrained sankhara. It is happening through the sankhara, the selection. So, due to the ignorance, this selection happened or preparations are happening. Only filtered thing only fed into the consciousness, so therefore non-meditators, consciousness is only know the partial truth. They have never no idea about what is the truth is. So therefore you have to start with the partial truth and try to maximize slowly, slowly. You will understand even in one single session, once in a way you can go there and come back, but it won't give any permanent change in your likings and disliking or personality. Whenever you go becoming, it's a second nature by familiarity, then only one day you will understand what a bewilderment as far as we are living in the sensuous world. What a contentment or what a satisfaction you can get by being no preparations, by letting it happen according to the natural law or understanding the law of the mind, and that is unmanifested mind, so that you will, I think, more and more practice, you are bound to see the intrinsic teaching of the Buddha. Through that you see the Buddha. Otherwise, you see the Buddha out of this bricks, or out of this cement, or that kind of thing. But the Dhamma, you find as scriptures, and stored in the cupboard, and you burn incense stick and worship, telling you are worshipping Dhamma. But that is not the what. You have to experience yourself. When you are experiencing, more and more you experiencing, you will get more other nuances and other shades of meaning towards the volition. But let that academic part be there. Keep it open. But while you are walking halfway, your radical thinking or radical reflection will give a kind of a contentment, not only in the listening or theoretical, not only in your rationalizing or deductive, but even in the practice. Now, ultimately, I think that once you get this idea, that will be the worst kind of addiction in the world. You can't do away with meditation. you will be pulled into meditation and you will see what a way of experiencing the present moment, what a way of experiencing the human life. So therefore, that is the best addiction you can give it to your dear and near ones. So therefore, even without this kind of missionary work, when you are practicing, that good vibration, I think, carried the message. So try best as much as possible that let goism and how do you call it? Do away with as much as possible preparations, mental preparation. Because whatever the mental preparation you are going to do, it is based upon either tanha or mana or ditthi. That means either due to desire or your conceit or your ego. So when and where it is necessary at the beginner, you have to do. You do it. You know it. But when and where are possible, you take the non-reaction, unassuming way and go in there. So you will learn when to do and when not to do it. So Buddha leave it for individuals. So only we can do is sharing this theoretical knowledge. And I hope that today contribution also will be helpful for one to develop the more and more, I will use the term, the motivation to the meditation, and one day you will understand the non-motivated natural meditation through you. That is what is called that final liberation and final realization. So with that remark, I would like to sum up the today's talk. Thank you very much for listening.